like Stephen King writes horror. If I was a Jew, then I'd light on menorah. I got rhymes for ya, excuse me, senora. Are you a horror? Are you a lady? Is it Eric Boyer or Marsha Bray? Let me know, hun, the beat'll get done. Just us in the position. I'll take my rod and then I'll go fishing. I'll get your river flowing, I'm always in the knowing. It comes to giving pleasure, I'm every woman's treasure. I came to work your body, so let me do my job. I've never been laid off, my rhyme is still paid off. Now I'm making records, now I'm making tapes. Steady busting suckers in bunches like grapes. Making all the pace, scooping up the loot. Putting suckers on the run, pull my gun and then I shoot. I never been a front, I never been a fraud. I got a natural skill, but I thank the Lord. Cause I feel blessed, I'm casually dressed. I always got my gun, but I never wear a vest. I'm quick on the draw, like a horse named McCraw. From the cartoon, boom, shalak, lock, boom. Shalak, lock, boom. Alright now, boom, shalak, lock, boom. Everybody, boom, shalak, lock, boom.
All right, that's quite enough of that. It is Tuesday. It is 4:30 in the afternoon, which means it is time for In the Cage with Bards, Vancouver's preeminent mixed martial arts program. And because Steven Seagal has yet to teach me any fancy kicks, I am still Carlin Bardsley. The big news is that UFC 126 is in the books, and Anderson Silva is still middleweight champion after a stunning front kick knockout of Vitor Belfort. The other big news is that John Jones is taking the spot of his injured teammate Rashad Evans in the light heavyweight title fight against Shogun Hua after defeating Ryan Bader. As they only give me a paltry 30 minutes for this program, I've decided to put up my full UFC 126 review as a video blog, which is available on the show's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/inthecagewithbards and also on the YouTube at www.youtube.com/user/inthecagewithbards. There you will find my full thoughts on the card and general ranting. One thing I would like to clear up is that I said on the video blog I would have preferred that Rampage Jackson get the light heavyweight title shot instead of John Jones. It has come out since that Rampage was indeed offered the shot but turned it down due to lack of training time and generally being too damn fat. So there you have it. The Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix kicks off this Saturday night. The tournament harkens back to the halcyon days of the Pride organization and their tournaments and has a lot of MMA fans excited as the tournament boasts one of the greatest collection of heavyweights ever assembled. The opening round gets underway with the return of the last emperor, Fyodor Emelianenko, in his first fight since his incredible upset loss to Fabricio Werdum as he takes on the massive Antonio Bigfoot Silva. One has to figure that Fedor will come in motivated after his first ever real career loss. I don't count the loss to Tsuyoshi Kosaka in the Rings organization because the fight was stopped off a cut which was caused by an elbow, which was against the rules in Rings. So that's how I see it. Fedor has a history of slaying giants. Just ask Semi Schilt and Hongman Choi. And given his sheer domination of just about every opponent not named Werdum, has to be the prohibitive favorite. But there are rumors floating around that Fedor has not had the best training camp in Russia. It was rumored that a would-be training partner Zhegard Mousasi flaked out on him, leaving Fedor to train with only the other members of the Red Devil Sports Club, which amounts to putting a Mercedes next to a bunch of K cars. One has to know Antonio Silva is coming into this fight focused, as this is his biggest opportunity to date and could cement his name into the record books with a victory over Fedor. Silva is coming off wins over Andrei Arlovsky and Mike Kyle and will look to use his significant size advantage to stifle the smaller yet seemingly mystically powered Russian. The other opening round matchup puts a former Soviet against a native of a breakaway republic as Sergei Karatonov takes on Belarus's Andrei the Pitbull Arlovsky. Arlovsky has the bigger name, being a former UFC heavyweight champ, and the faster hands to go along with better boxing, but one has to wonder about his focus and his chin, both of which have come into question in the past. A motivated Arlovsky ought to be able to get by Karatonov, but Karatonov brings a size advantage into the fight and heavy hands to the table, along with an impressive resume that includes wins over names like Grand Prix participants Fabricio Werdum and Strikeforce heavyweight champ Alistair Overeem. Will this be Arlovsky's launching pad back into the top of the heavyweight division, or his fourth straight loss and possible ticket right out of Strikeforce? We'll find out this Saturday night. We're going to take a quick break now and come back with an interview with Vancouver Athletic Commission member Jonathan Tweedale to discuss the state of MMA in our fair city, among other subjects, right after this.
No More Strangers, Beatroot, WinnieCooper.net, and CITR 101.9 FM are proud to present the much-anticipated EP release of Super Cassette, February 18th at the Cobalt. Joining Super Cassette will be The Raccoons, Ono Yoko, and DJ Hunk the Drunk. Showtime is 9 p.m. and tickets are $10 at the door. Super Cassette EP release party, February 18th at the Cobalt, 917 Main Street.
And welcome back to 101.9 CITR FM. We're back here in the cage with Bards. Joining us today from the Vancouver Athletic Commission, we have the one, the only, the esteemed Jonathan Tweedale. How are you today, Jonathan?
I'm fine, Carlin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I've been trying for a while to get someone from the Athletic Commission on, and I'm glad you decided to step up.
No problem.
We'll start with first things first. So what made you decide to become involved with the Vancouver Athletic Commission?
Well, I've been following the sport for years. And there seemed to be training a little bit, and following as a spectator. And there seemed to be an intersection between this interest and some skills I could possibly bring from professionally, and hopefully to help with the regulation of MMA moving forward. I think in the past there have been some difficulties that attempts at regulation have suffered, and I want to be part of the process of moving it forward.
Now, I think a lot of people are surprised when they look at your career path and see someone involved in commercial litigation as a member of the Athletic Commission. You mentioned you had trained a bit. Can you tell us a little bit more about your sporting background?
Well, back before the days of UFC, as we know it, I grew up with the traditional martial arts background, and then in university, a little bit of the sort of wrestling and the like, and then more recently, I've gone to a number of the local gyms just now and then, just to try to learn some submissions and get hit in the face a few times,
Always a good time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You became involved in the whole MMA versus City Hall debacle last year when you acted as then-chairman of the VAC, Mirko Mladenovic's legal advisor. How would you describe City Hall's attitude towards the Athletic Commission and the sport of mixed martial arts at that time?
Well, I can't really go into specifics about that, but I can tell you that I think there's been a lot of misinformation floating around about that. I think there's obviously a lot of interest in what's going on with the commission and with the city, and a lot of speculation. And right now, the commission has a very good working relationship with the city staff, and I anticipate that continuing. There's absolutely no acrimony or anything of the like that you see in the the news articles that are floating out there on the internet.
I see. So going back to that period last year where it looked like we were going to lose the UFC after it was approved, do you feel that city manager Penny Ballin was actively trying to undermine the autonomy of the Athletic Commission in her attempts to keep the UFC out of Vancouver?
Well, I can't comment at all on that, and that's not a criticism. I just can't comment on that, but every indication that I've received is that the city wants to work closely with the commission to move forward with regulation and possibly bring another event back this year. As you know, there have been rumors out there about an event, no announcement yet, but that couldn't happen without the city. So
I see. In the end, do you feel that Mirko got a raw deal when he was forced off the commission?
I can't comment on the particular circumstances concerning Mr. Mladenovic. And I guess I'll have to leave it at that. I don't have any opinion on the matter, and there's really no insight I can share with you on that.
Okay.
Well, now, the commission, of course, now headed up by Dave Rudberg, who wound up kind of parachuted into the position. How would you characterize his attitude towards mixed martial arts?
Mr. Rudberg appears to be relatively new to the sport. He's a very experienced in terms of his relationship in the past with the city, and I think the commission is very fortunate to have him as a chair, facilitating the relationship, and there's a trust there that is invaluable for the commission. Mr. Rudberg attended the recent officials course that Big John McCarthy and Jaron Villel put on out at the River Rock, and it's an attitude of openness. It's exactly the opposite of what I think the fears were last year, as articulated in the MMA media.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that he has an independent voice on matters, or is he there simply to promote an agenda that comes from within City Hall?
No, I think there's sort of a misconception underneath that question. I don't think there's any agenda on anyone's part. I think my impression, speaking for myself, is that everyone wants to work professionally to move forward with the regulation of MMA, whether that means there's going to be one event this year or more, possibly smaller shows. I don't know, but nothing is going to be possible without professionalism on everyone's part, and thus far, things have gone very well.
Okay. Now you mentioned yourself, Mr. Rudberg, along with commission member Dr. Jerome Yang, ended the command judging course put on by Big John at the River Rock. Excuse me. Now, was that basically a fact-finding mission for the commission? What was was it just to take in information? What was the goal there?
There were a number of purposes there. Part of it was the commission has an interest in ensuring that officials who are prospectively going to be licensed in this jurisdiction are adequately educated, and courses such as that course are an invaluable part of the process of getting officials to a point that they can do a competent job. So we wanted to see what that education process was. We also wanted to be educated ourselves, at least I certainly did. And that's where the course, from my perspective, was so helpful. The most interesting part of the course, in my view, was the part where we watched fights silently, all the attendees filling out our own scorecards, handing them in with our names, and Big John and Jaron would review them, and then he'd call us out and ask us to justify why we had scored certain rounds the way we had. And so sort of a Socratic method of teaching there, and he steered people towards consensus as to how these rounds should be scored. And the fundamental concept that Big John and Jaron were trying to underscore was the notion of effectiveness. Forget flamboyance, forget what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Forget if the punch actually landed. What was the effect? And when you're tracking the relative effect or effectiveness of what each fighter is doing in a round, it takes a lot of concentration over a 5-minute round, actually.
Sure,
to measure those the scales as to where things are going to balance out by the end. And it takes a lot of insight into the actual techniques in order to determine who is being more effective. For instance, you have a situation where someone's on the ground. Most people assume the guy on the top is in the, is in the more effective position, actually pretty neutral position if the guy has got him in the guard.
Sure.
But if there's a lot of movement, you got to be able to distinguish between the guy on top moving because he's trying to stay balanced, he's trying to stay on top, and he's effectively defending.
Mm-hmm.
you know, he's essentially defending from the guy on the bottom. Likewise, in the clinch, who is really controlling in the clinch? You need to understand, sort of the physics of it, in order to accurately get. You know, it's not always the guy with his back against the cage that's losing in the clinch. You know, so. Yeah. There was a heavy technical component to the course as well, too, and that it really showed the extent to which you need a fairly high degree of technical proficiency to do a fair job of judging a fight. I mean, everyone at the bar thinks that they can say who won the fight, you know, but right. that certainly isn't the case. And officials...
Or Cecil Peoples, for that matter.
Yes, there are aberrations, it seems, every jurisdiction, yes.
One thing that did jump out at me when I was reading the minutes for the VAC meeting in December, it said, quote, "It was noted that the UFC has the financial resources, proper medical backup, trained referees, etc., but smaller events do not and could attract liability to the city," end quote. First off, when they use the term liability to the city, are they referring to a fighter that could become injured and then turn around and sue the city? Is that the concern there?
I don't know that there's one particular concern. Ultimately, the city would view events like this as a business enterprise, essentially, and you'd have to look at the economic benefit to the city together with any risks engendered by having that activity. There are a number of ways that any business activity can go awry to engender liability. I don't think there's any particular scenario that's being entertained. That's standard any time that you have a business enterprise where you're connected. You need to make sure that you're protected from a risk management perspective. So I hear what you're getting at. It seems pretty far-fetched that a fighter would
right.
sue the city. Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, when the commission says that the UFC can run shows here because they have the proper medical backup and the trained referees and everything, aren't those things that are supposed to be provided by the Athletic Commission that has jurisdiction over the event?
Right. The officials ultimately are licensed by the commission, and because it's a relatively new sport, we don't have a lot of local guys that have a lot of experience officiating. We have a number. Mm-hmm. There are folks that have actually local guys that have refereed literally hundreds of fights.
Sure, Kevin Dorn, for example.
Sure, or Jason Dara, amongst
yeah.
others. But you saw last year, non-local officials were brought in to supplement what we had
mm-hmm.
here. So that wouldn't really likely be possible to do for smaller shows. But with courses like the one, this last weekend, we're going to have more and more officials that can do an appropriate job here. And so that would obviate the need for smaller promotions to fly in the Herb Deans of
right.
the world and the
sure.
Big Johns of the world to assist. On insurance as well, it's going to be easier for a larger entity to afford an expensive insurance policy. But
mm-hmm.
so as we've in this trial period, the two-year trial period in Vancouver, we've had one event.
Right.
So, with the next event, presumably there'll be another event before this trial period ends. Probably the most likely scenario is it would be a large event with a promoter able to easily satisfy the risk management concerns that the city would have.
Yeah, and just you know, more towards that point, you know, also in the December minutes, it stated that it was agreed that the commission will not be flexible in reducing the rules for smaller events. Does the use of the term rules refer specifically to the amount of insurance necessary, or are there other specific rules that that the commission would need to have in place before granting a promoter's permit to, for example, a Mark Pavlich, who has been on the show and said he, you know, said to the city, give me the UFC deal, and wasn't able to get it?
Well, I don't know about the situation with the MFC and any interest they've expressed in coming here. I just don't know about that. With respect to insurance requirements, you'll see if you take a look at the bylaw that insurance requirements are set at two levels. They're set by the commission, and there's also a check at the level of the city manager's office. There's a reason for that. I mean, just the easiest way to understand it is the commission isn't looking at a prospective event as a business enterprise, fundamentally, and the city is. The city has to look at the risk to the city. That's not primarily what the commission is looking at. So there are sort of two checks on the insurance. One would assume that a smaller event would engender risks of a smaller magnitude, and that perhaps that would be reflected in a lower insurance requirement. I don't know. These are discussions that are going to be had in the near future.
Okay. So there's no, you know, when they say that they'll not be flexible in reducing the rules, is there a hard and fast set of rules that are spelled out, or is it just something that they're taking a look at, saying, well, you know, UFC is, you know, the big dog in the yard. We'll allow that, you know, and see how that goes, and not really worry about smaller promotions or local promotions on that regard.
I think what you need to understand, Carlin, is we're very early in this process, mm-hmm. and nothing is set in stone. A new commission has just been appointed as of January 1st, and we're looking at everything, and we'll be dialoguing with the city manager's office and trying to find something that's practicable and moves forward in this trial period with the regulation of MMA. I can't tell you that the commission is going to do X or isn't. I think the idea is that the rules are not going to be the rules themselves are sort of in a state of flux. We had one event under the rules, but mm-hmm. we've got to tighten those up. You're probably familiar with Mr. Rudberg's comments that he'd like to see some things done differently this year.
Yes,
and there's a reference to that state of flux right there.
Yeah.
So we're going to be dialoguing about those rules and. Hopefully, we're going to be making it feasible for more than one promoter to be mm-hmm. going ahead. If it's not possible to do that, well, then it's not possible. But one would hope that it would be possible.
Mm-hmm. As you said at the last VAC meeting there, Mr. Rudberg, he did turn the last UFC event a success, but he did say that there were several unspecified things that he'd like to see change should they return. Has he given any indication to you or to the commission at large what those things might be?
That's a discussion we haven't had. I haven't had that discussion with Mr. Rudberg. My impression is that they're not significant changes. It's nothing to be concerned about. I know that from the MMA fans' point of view, there's almost a persecution complex where you might read something into that. I expect that those changes are just going to be part of the tightening up of the rules to make things work better and more effectively.
All right, and we've been talking about the rumors that UFC will be back for another date. It seems like the worst-kept secret in the world, quite frankly. Can you comment yet that the UFC will indeed be returning to Vancouver on June the 11th?
No, I can't comment on that.
I see. All right. I'm loving these lawyer answers, Jonathan.
I'm sorry.
All right. Well, if and when the UFC does return, will they be expected to put up the same amount of liability insurance that they did previously? Because that seemed to be, anyway, one of the sticking points.
Well, again, the insurance requirements are going to be set by the commission and by the city. And that's not something that can be determined in advance. There's a process for determining that. And I know the narrative in the media is insurance levels were set at it so high no one can meet them, but the UFC sort of grudgingly went along with it, but perhaps didn't make any money on the event. That's the narrative. That's part of what I was referring to earlier when I talked about some of the misinformation that's mm-hmm. floating around there. I think the one discussion that needs to be had and that will be had at the commission is whether there would be any way to index the insurance requirements to the size of the event if the size of the event materially affected the risks associated with the event.
Well, you know, I am excited at the new look of the commission. People like yourself and people like Mike Patnod on the commission. I think that generally that the sport's going to get a lot more of a fair shake than it has seen in the past. What do you see happening with the sport here in Vancouver at the end of the 2-year trial period?
Well, my understanding is that at the end of this trial period, a report will be provided to council and a determination will be made by council about what to do. And the commission's job, and the commission is there to assist the city fundamentally. You know, the commission only exists at the whim of the city, in fact.
Well, we saw that with North Vancouver, who doesn't have a commission anymore.
Right. Exactly. So we want to do a job that is going to result in us being in a position to provide a very helpful report to council at the end of this trial period. And then it'll be up to council to determine what's the next step.
Jonathan Tweedale, member of the Vancouver Athletic Commission, thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
My pleasure.
And we'll be back to wrap things up on In the Cage with Bards right after this.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, Friday mornings at 9. Join me as we explore topics like health and wellness, prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Well, that's about it for me. Thanks again to Jonathan Tweedale for joining the program. It was great to have a member of the Athletic Commission on the program, even if he was a little lawyerly, but hey, that's his nature, that's his business. Don't forget, my UFC 126 review is up on the show's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/inthecagewithbards. Going out on Ain't No Sunshine by DMX, which was Anderson Silva's walkout music this past weekend. I actually prefer the old Bill Withers version, but you won't hear me argue with the champ. Until next time, the bell has sounded.
It's dark and hell is hot. Ain't no sunshine when it's on. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when it's on. Cause when it's on, we can never be gone. Every time, cause we on play. Turn out the lights, is what he's saying. Now you don't wanna fight, but that be plain. Thinking it's alright, keep playing with that role. And you gon' know tonight, that old dirt getting tough. Now it's all over. Reed, you said you was brave, but now it's all over. You just one of the many, plenty I done gave it to. No saving you, no matter how many tears your mom's cry. Ain't gon' bring back, plus in hell you gon' fry. Why? Now the only two relevant questions is the we and the suggestions. Either way, you up out of here for good. Now,
mention your name, they knocking on wood. Did I get my point across? And the on the I toss. Ain't no sunshine in this home. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when it's on. Cause when it's on, yeah. Be gone every time, cause we don't pay. Yeah, every time, cause we don't pay. Yeah, every time, cause we don't pay. It ain't no sunshine when the dark.